welcome to Twinked. A lighthearted plant-based podcast exploring the vegetal roots of history and folklore, what'll kill you, and what makes a decent snack. I'm Alex, I'm a keen walker, forager, and story hunter.
Hi, I'm Alice, and my cat is staring at me right now, so I'm feeling a bit nervous. He's putting me off.
So this week we are going to talk about the yew tree.
You chose a very interesting topic for this week, Alex.
You're too kind.
You're in for a treat.
And that's it. That's the podcast. Thanks for coming. So we're going to talk about the European or common yew. The Latin name for it is the Taxus baccata. Taxus comes from the same root as toxic.
Oh, okay.
And baccata means bearing berries.
Okay, very good. That explains it.
And yew as a name comes originally from a word for the color brown, which I feel like happens a lot. Mistletoe also had affiliations with the color brown, didn't it? It's like they didn't see the green bits of the plant. They were just like, I don't know, it's a plant, it's brown.
Lazy.
It's native to basically the entirety of Europe and Turkey and some parts of Northern Africa.
So yew trees, especially old or ancient yew trees, look really cool. They look quite, I don't know, they look like something that would be in folklore or fairy tale.
Yeah, I was trying to think of how to describe it for someone who doesn't know it. They kind of have these gnarled, twisted, characterful trunks.
Gnarly.
Yeah.
That's a good word.
And do you have anything about the leaves?
So they're evergreen and they have thin little pines that finish in a point.
They look a little bit to me like a centipede, like a dark green centipede.
Yeah.
If the proportions of the body and the legs were reversed in a way. You get these dark green needly leaves that grow on either side of a central stem thing. So that makes sense, right? Like centipede.
Yeah.
Reversed centipede.
I totally see that.
Yeah. And they're dioecious. Do you remember learning about that when we were doing the stinging nettles?
Oh, okay.
Dioecious means that you have separate male and female plants.
Yes, okay, I remember.
So males release really high pollen counts and are considered to be really allergenic. Females, on the other hand, trap the pollen and don't release any themselves. So they actually reduce the pollen count in the air. The females are also the ones who have the berries in the winter, which are called arils. And they're these really bright pinky red. They look really perfect. They almost look like fake and waxy with a big hole on the outer end that you can see the seed through.
Yeah, when I first saw a picture, I thought it was a picture of fake flowers or something. And then fake little rosebuds. And then I looked closely and I was like, oh, it's berries.
Yeah, but they look like you'd make a Christmas decoration of them and it would be like, oh, sure. Plants don't have berries that look like, I don't know, they're just too much.
They're too bright.
And yeah.
Yeah.
So occasionally the trees can be monoecious instead of dioecious.
Oh.
And sometimes they can change sex over the course of their life.
Oh, cool.
And there's been at least one record of there was a place where they had a female tree, but it had one single male branch.
Oh, wow. So yew trees are the oldest living trees in the UK. There is an old yew tree, apparently the oldest in the country, that's rumoured to be like about 5,000 years. And that is the Fortingall yew, which is in a churchyard in Perthshire.
Yeah, they're not sure. It's somewhere they think between 3,000 and 9,000 years old.
Oh, wow.
But they don't know. And so we know that a lot of yew trees are really old, and it's thought that at least 10 of the yew trees in the UK predate the 10th century. But they don't know exactly how old they are, and this is because it's almost impossible to accurately date a yew tree.
Yeah.
Because they erode from the inside over time. So the traditional ways of finding out how old trees are, which is like counting the rings, you can't do to them because they're just not there because the insides are gone. plants. But that adds to their really cool, witchy...
their mystique.
Yeah, because they look like someone could live in them. And there are some in France where they've constructed altars inside the trees and they have like doors in
it's
the...
It's so cool.
It's incredible.
So I saw a fun fact that at least 500 churchyards in England contain yew trees where the tree is older than the church.
There are lots of theories about why there are yew trees in churchyards. So some say that there were yew trees there already, which the pagans were worshipping around, and then they built churches there on purpose in order to make it easier for people to transition or to make people transition. Yeah. And then there were related theories that, well, the yew trees were important to pagans, and so when they built churches, they also planted yew trees. There was one that said that yew trees apparently trap the gases that were released by rotting bodies in cemeteries, so that might be one of the reasons that they were planted in churchyards.
Oh, okay. So I saw somewhere that they thought that yew trees were planted on the graves of plague victims to protect and to like purify the dead. So like to protect the dead rather than protect the living from the dead bodies. But I suppose both of those explanations make sense.
Yeah, I guess one's spiritual and the other one's practical, but they could both be true. The yew trees might have been planted in churchyards because they're really poisonous to livestock. So it was to discourage herders and farmers from letting their livestock graze in churchyards and cemeteries. Which leads us very, very, actually really clumsily to Alice, can you eat it?
So the berries themselves, the flesh of the berries is edible, but every other part of the yew tree is poisonous and really seriously poisonous. So like about 50 grams of yew needles is enough to be lethal. So I would say don't eat it. Avoid those tempting tasty berries because the seeds inside the berries are lethally poisonous.
Yeah, I think they're meant to be the most poisonous part of the entire plant too. Oh, and the whole plant is really, really, really poisonous. Apparently even the sawdust, if you're making something with yew and you inhale the sawdust, it can at least make you go blind or die or...
Oh dear God.
It's bad news. Use a mask if you're gonna make things with it and just don't put it in your mouth.
Avoid.
But look at it, it's gorgeous. Look at it hard and touch it not so hard. They also say, I know when we've been looking for funguses to pick and eat, they do say to avoid any that are growing on yew trees. People aren't 100% sure, but there's a chance that some of the toxins get transferred to the fruiting bodies.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Rich and I had a real inner turmoil moment. We went for a walk and we wound up in a really lovely little churchyard in the countryside. And there was a yew tree in full berries.
Oh, wow.
And it was absolutely gorgeous. And I had read that you could eat the fleshy parts of the berries, but that the seeds were deadly poisonous. So we stood there for like, oh God, so long. I think maybe about half an hour having a debate between us, but also inside of ourselves about whether we should taste the berries.
No.
And we were like, okay, well, they might taste really good. Well, if we just avoid the seeds, it should be fine. And then in the end, we decided that on balance, I...
Don't do it.
Yeah, I could wait and eat a berry that I'm sure won't kill me and I'll probably get the same enjoyment.
Yeah, and apparently they're like quite nice and sweet, but there's not a lot of flavour going on. So you're risking a lot for... you may as well just eat a spoonful of sugar.
Right, which I've done.
So have I.
In fact, I did that last night.
Anytime I'm making anything with like muscovado sugar, I just take out the big lumps that stick together and eat them.
Yes, me too. That's the best
bit. So good.
It is wonderful being an adult and it's your kitchen.
Isn't it?
And if you just want to eat some sugar, well...
You can.
You can. Although sometimes if you're me, your partner is there going, are you just eating sugar?
No.
So the poison properties of it is that it's cardiotoxic, so it messes up your heart. And if you eat it, you have to go to the hospital and you very well may die. It's bad, 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 bad.
Really bad.
So I have some stuff about the related to the poison of the yew to do with ritualistic suicide and yew.
Oh, cool. Okay, I haven't...
Not you, Alice, you the tree.
Yeah, very good. I'm glad you clarified. Getting worried. I haven't heard that. Awesome.
Yeah, I thought this was absolutely fascinating. So, you know how there are stories of warriors choosing to fall on their swords rather than be captured or surrender or kind of like witness the defeat of their armies?
Yeah.
Right. Well, it turns out that in some places it wasn't uncommon for them to consume yew rather than falling on their swords. It was like kind of an alternative option.
This lighthearted podcast contains some really gruesome, graphic, violent nastiness.
This is why it's explicit content.
Yeah. For violence, not just accidental swearing.
No.
The brutality and the really questionable misogynistic fairy tales.
They really are. They, parental guidance, please. Although we comment on them quite enthusiastically.
Yeah. We're like, obviously, this is bullshit.
See? Swear. Right. Please, I'm going to tell you about some suicides, Alice. Let me tell you about suicide. So, there was a Gallic Germanic tribe called the Eburones. And they were living what is now south of the Netherlands, east of Belgium, and the German Rhineland. One of the chiefs of that tribe was called Cativolcus. In 54 BCE, Cativolcus joined forces with the other Eburone king called Ambiorix to rise up against the Romans, who were occupying the area. And at first, they were victorious. They managed to slaughter tons of Romans. They were doing really, really well. But then the tide began to turn. And the next year, Caesar arrived with more troops. And they absolutely crushed the Eburones and, like, razed the villages, burned everything. And at this point, Cativolcus was quite old and he was past fighting. And he was just seeing this absolute defeat coming. So he ended up drinking a concoction made out of yew rather than see this devastation unfold.
It's got some really dark associations, doesn't it?
It
Lots
really
of death
does.
And doom.
But on the flip side of the death and doom, I found some records of it being used in medicine. So in the unproven category of medicine, we have some records of herbalists using it to treat cystitis, headaches, neuralgia, and some other ailments. But there's no record of whether they worked, and I would very much caution against doing this. But in real, proven, real-world land...
I like it there.
Yeah. The leaves and the bark of the yew tree contain an alkaloid which has been harvested and used in a chemotherapy drug. And that's real, and I think they're still doing it. I think it's like one of the components in chemotherapy drugs. So it's not a DIY medicine. It's not like, oh, take a bit of yew for your aches and pains. But it's interesting in that this highly toxic plant is genuinely used in modern day medicine.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I had no idea.
Yeah.
So yew trees are also known as the tree of death, and they were a symbol of death and for Christians, resurrection, and for the Druids, reincarnation, because they're the really old branches that drooped down and touched the ground would actually re-root and grow trunks, form new trunks.
I think that might be one of the reasons that they're really hard to date as well, because the old trunk will like rot away, but then you've got this new trunk and new growth. And so it's a mix of like the old growth and the new growth. And it's really difficult to tell.
Yeah, then they kind of meld together and you're not sure which part's which. And that's why it looks all tangled and gnarly, I guess.
Yeah, and they can split and not die as well. I've got a bunch of stuff of uses of the wood, like some carpentry facts.
Cool.
Which, to be honest, is the majority of what I've written about. So are you ready for that, or are there other things you'd like to talk about first?
The only other thing I have to contribute is Deirdre.
Oh, great. Tell me Deirdre.
Okay, cool. So this is an Irish folk tale about Deirdre and her connection to the yew tree. When Deirdre was born, she was the daughter of the bard Felim. A druid predicted that she would become so beautiful that. She would be the subject of lots of fights. There would be wars breaking out because of her. Lots of people would die in these wars. So some people suggested, because of this prophecy, that they should just kill her at birth, or kill the baby, in order to avoid this coming true. But Conor McNish, who was the king of Ulster, heard about this, and he said that he would marry her in order to keep her safe and stop this prophecy from being fulfilled. So while she was young, while she was growing up, he asked his own nurse, who was called Laversham, I think, to take care of Deirdre. So yes, the king, who was probably a lot older than her, came to see if she was really beautiful, and obviously she was. So that part of the prophecy at least had become reality. However, when she was old enough to wed, she told her nurse, Laversham, that she didn't really want to be with the king and there was someone else that she preferred. So there were three brothers in Scotland, the three sons of Uisne. And one of the three young, handsome men was called Naois. So, of course, Deirdre and Naois fell in love, and Deirdre ran away to Scotland to be with him. And they lived there in peace for quite a few years, and they were protected by Naois's other two brothers. But the King of Ulster didn't give up, even though nothing bad was happening because of her. And he was the one who said originally that he wanted to marry her in order to prevent the wars. He ended up going to war in order to get her back.
Oh, God.
All three of the sons of Uisne were killed, and Deirdre ended up at the mercy of the King of Ulster again. She lived with him for a year and a day, but in desperate sadness, she was heartbroken at the loss of her love. And in the end, she ended up committing suicide. And then from her grave, a yew tree grew. And that yew tree reached out its branches and combined with a yew tree all the way up in Scotland, which grew out of the grave of Naois. So they intertwined in the end.
You can say you're against war and death. That's like fine, all fine, except when you don't get your way, then suddenly you're all pro-war and death. And then you're like, well, war and death works when it's like for me.
Yeah, very convenient.
Great.
King Conor.
Conor. Oh, thanks for telling the story, Alice. So I left you a message shortly before we started recording this to be like, I've abandoned folklore. I've gone hard into the history.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the stuff that really stuck out to me was really like historical carpentry. So
yeah.
Here, welcome to this new podcast on historical carpentry.
We should totally mark it as historical carpentry. Someone will love that.
Yeah, my friend Joe would like that. He's a carpenter.
History-loving carpenter?
Yeah, probably.
Great, it's made for him.
Hello, Joe.
This is for you.
So I found one of the world's oldest surviving wooden artifacts is called the Clacton Spear.
Oh yeah, I heard about this.
Yeah, it's a wooden spearhead and it is thought to be at least 400,000 years old.
Oh, wow.
400,000. I mean, I feel like I can conceive of when the Romans were here and like maybe 2 to 3,000 years ago, I have it in my head as like what life might have been like, but I can't fully picture 400,000.
Yeah, me neither.
Okay. And then we move on to the thing that I have concentrated all of my energy on.
I'm excited.
God, I hope anyone else finds this interesting. Longbows.
Cool.
Yeah. So think Robin Hood. These were long bows used to shoot arrows. So they're usually roughly the height of the person firing them. Yew was the best wood for making longbows. And this is apparently because of the properties of both the sapwood and the heartwood. So one is really good at dealing with tension and the other one's really good at dealing with compression, which is what you need when you're using this. Because it's a massive piece. It's made from one bit of wood. English wood was apparently okay, but the better yew wood came from the continent. From, I think, Italy and Spain were considered to have really good yew wood for making bows. And there was actually a massive problem because they used a lot of yew trees in the UK. Well, yeah, in what is now the UK for these boughs. And then they were importing it from the continent. And there came to a point where there was a bit of an ecological crisis where in lots of countries they were really worried that the yew trees were being depleted because they were being used to make so many boughs. What we think of now as the English longbow, which was around during the medieval period, actually originated in Wales. There was an Anglo-Norman conquest of Wales shortly after the Normans came to this island. The Welsh lost, but the Anglo-Normans were so impressed with their longbows and their ability to fight with them that they conscripted a bunch of Welsh people into their campaign against Scotland. So the longbows then became incredibly important. Longbow practice became sacrosanct, essentially. Edward I banned all sports except archery on Sundays.
Oh, wow.
It was the only thing you were really allowed to do on Sundays, so it forced people to practice.
Yeah.
And then Henry I made a law that if you accidentally shot someone while you were practicing with your longbow, you were fine. You wouldn't get punished.
Wow.
But it's because they felt that it was so important to get people to practice with these because they were really like the key to the army's success at the time. And
so if you practiced shooting people that you didn't like, but you got good at it and then you successfully shot people you didn't like, it was okay because you were good at your longbow now. So,
but yeah, I don't know how much discretion they had to be like, actually, this is the 10th person you've shot this month. Maybe you're not practicing anymore.
Maybe you're a psychopath.
But I can kind of understand why they needed people to practice so much because they were really difficult to use and they required so much strength and so much training.
Oh, wow.
So if we fast forward a bit to 1545, during the reign of Henry VIII, his warship, the Mary Rose, sank during the Battle of the Solent against the French. And this wreck was excavated over the years. So hundreds of people died when the ship went down. They think only about 35 people survived, and several of the people who died were archers. What they found with a lot of the archers is that their spines were twisted in a certain way because of the way they used their bodies when they were using their bows.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and at least one of them had grooves on his archery fingers, his like two right-hand fingers. These English longbows were a pivotal part of the Hundred Years' War and really pretty much the reason why the English won some of their kind of seminal victories. I've got a quote from Shakespeare.
Awesome.
From King Edward III. So Prince Edward, the Black Prince, is at the Battle of Poitiers. He says, "Up, up, Artois, the ground itself is armed with fire containing flint. Command our bows to hurl away their pretty coloured yew and to it with stones. Away, Artois, away, my soul doth prophesy we win the day." So the Battle of Poitiers, which is in 1356, it's 10 years after the Battle of Crecy. And in both of these battles, the English were heavily outnumbered. And then they basically won largely because of their amazing skills with the longbow. So in the Battle of Poitiers, the Black Prince ended up getting the majority of his knights to dismount. The archers were behind the rest of them, and now that the knights were off their horses, they could fire over the tops of the army to weaken the advancing French as they came in waves. Between the second and third French wave, the English Arthurs, the English archers, not Arthurs.
Some of them would have been Arthurs.
The English archers were meant to have gone and recuperated their arrows from the bodies because they didn't necessarily have a never-ending supply of arrows.
Yeah.
So they went and they like grabbed the ones that they could grab to restock their arrows out of the already dead bodies.
Gruesome. More gruesome facts.
Yeah, and the use of the longbow continued for a long time, even after cannon and firearm became more common. But apparently it's not even necessarily that they were less deadly is why they stopped being used. It was more because with firearms you needed a lot less training. You could just kind of hand it to someone and be like, this might fire in the right direction. Try your luck. Squeeze the trigger and see where it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's it. So, yeah, you was the major wood for making longbows. And longbows have been pretty instrumental to the course of history.
Yeah. Yeah. Like massive parts of huge battles.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, I think I'm going to pretty much sign us off there because That's a lot. We've said a lot about you.
Yeah, you have quite a task on your hands with the editing.
You're not kidding. Thank you so much for listening to Twigged. We really appreciate it. If you can subscribe if you haven't already, do check out our Instagram, which is at Twigged Podcast, and our website, which is twiggedpodcast.com.
And if you've got any comments or questions about this episode or even requests for future episodes, please get in touch with us. You can get in touch on the website or you can email us at twiggedpodcast@gmail.com.
And tell your friends.
Tell your friends, especially if they are historic carpenters.
Only if they're historic carpenters. You know what? We don't want anyone else listening to this. Have a lovely 2 weeks and we will see you. Well, you will. No, we won't do anything. You'll hear us in 2 weeks' time if you so choose to.
I know, I always want to say we'll see you next time, but we don't really.
Who are you? Thanks so much for listening to Twigged. I have said that it's an explicit podcast, but just because I'm never sure if I've managed to edit out any time we've said shit or something. So I'm just like, wow.
Some of the shits might have gone over your head, so you have to check the little box that says explicit content. Oh no! But all of the kids and teenagers won't listen to it then.
It'll bring the teenagers in, and then they'll learn all about plants, expecting there to be some like massive F-bomb.
Yeah. Or dirty stories. I could try and make the Deirdre story dirty.